Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The new, refined, seven-seat Kia Sorento. Kia's large SUV. Available now at your nearest Kia dealer. And Toolmart, the complete tool centre, serving WA for over 40 years. This is Sports Day. Don't change me out.
Don't change a thing. As you would have heard just before the break, certainly in the mid-1990s, it was a turbulent period for the West Australian Football League, known as the West Star Rules then. And Peel Thunder were very much a hot topic. There was one football club, one of the proud football clubs in the Waffle, the Perth Football Club, who were on their knees and going through some very hard times. There was a lot of politics during that period with the Demons and with the other clubs and also the West Australian Football Commission. And to look back on what was a significant period in WA football, I'm joined by former Perth Football Club president, Nick Catalano, who joins me in the studio. Nick, thanks for your time.
The way it all started was I'd been playing footy for a long time and I had an involvement in the WA Super Rules and I was actually the vice president, which started in about 83. Unfortunately, I had to have an operation and wasn't able to continue playing. So I ended up moving out and coaching the under-15s at Thornley at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And the former president of the Perth Footy Club, Barry McGrath, he had a lobster boat, as a matter of fact, and we were dealing through the industry, through our business, we were dealing with lobsters. And because Barry knew that I had a fairly long involvement in footy, and he asked me to join the board. And that's how it all started.
So when you joined the Perth Footy Club as a board member, what state did you find the Perth Footy Club? Because as we know, they haven't won a premiership since 1977. There have been financial issues over the years. But when you went to your first board meeting, what state was it in?
Well, I was actually disappointed because the Perth Footy Club in the 60s were probably the most powerful club in Australia at the time. They were my second favourite club in actual fact because I did spend a bit of time at Swans. And so I was quietly disappointed. I felt that things were just quite slow in many ways, development, the football department, the social side of things. Things were pretty slow back at that time.
Mm. As we know, during the 1980s and 1990s, the club had very much severe financial problems, very much before you landed there as a board member in 1994. But there was still, around those years, the push to take the Perth Footy Club away from Lathlane Park, and at that stage to John Dunn Oval in Kelmscott. In other words, take the football club to the people. Were you around when it was still being discussed, or basically had it been put to bed by then?
It kind of hadn't been put to bed, but whatever transpired prior to me arriving was kind of done and dusted. But the matter kept coming up. I think the commission had a strong interest in having a side in the Southern Corridor, and so it had never gone away. And it did come up again during our time because I do remember going to the members and the board having a strategic plan at the time. This is further down the track, maybe a year or so after I became heavily involved in the club. And we did go to the members and we did have, I think we had the okay to investigate the possibility, although it didn't eventuate in our time. We looked at a number of issues back at that time, including discussions with Brian Cook and Trevor Nisbet.
So you looked at maybe getting Perth together with the West Coast Eagles in those years, is that correct?
Yeah, well, that was a good 20-odd years ago that the Perth Footy Club needed change. It needed something, and we did have those discussions with Brian Cook and Trevor Nisbet.
So how far down the track did they go,
the possibility of the Demons and the Eagles getting together?
I think although there was interest, it was in its very early stages, and unfortunately at that time it didn't have the legs that we were looking for anyway.
So the reasons you did that?
The footy club was in dire straits. Financially, it was struggling, like a few other clubs, of course, in the WFL at the time. You know, my challenge after becoming president was, you know, what can we do? How can we fix this once great football club and try and take it to a new time?
Went on the board in 1994, and by the end of that year, you were president of the Perth Footy Club. How did that transpire?
Look, at the end of the day, I felt that change needed to take place. It wasn't going to be easy. It was change from the top right through. I remember at the time, David Glascott was the coach. From what I learnt in the very early stages of my involvement at board level, he was not going to be the answer to take the football club to where it used to be.
Was there one particular incident, I believe, and what I've been told, and you can clarify this, that a couple of the board members were keen to just go into the rooms to hear Glascott address the players, and board members were barred from the Perth Footy Club change rooms. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, at the time when I was just a director and first arrived there, the first thing I did, Johnny Gavrinich, a former player and West Perth footballer, really top guy, John, I suggested to him...
Was he the football manager?
He was a director of football.
Director of football.
Basically, on behalf of the board, he's really Glascott's boss. I asked John if we'd go in and listen to the coach, and John was a really nice guy, and Glascott's the advice that I received was that Glascott wouldn't allow any board member go into the boardroom and listen to him speak.
You took that as a bit of a slap in the face?
Absolutely. I mean, the board runs the football club. The board is the coach's boss, and the director of football represents the board, well, on behalf of the board, basically is the coach's boss, and so he should have every right, even if other board members don't necessarily have to be in there because they all have their own portfolios. Mm. But Johnny Gavrinich was the director of football. Of course he had the right to be in the boardroom, in the change rooms to listen to his coach talking.
There was one game I recall that Perth got blasted by, it might have been East Fremantle, by over 20 goals. And it was quite visible that David Glascott wasn't happy with the performance. And you witnessed and other board members witnessed his address to the players after that game, is that correct?
Well, we weren't actually allowed to witness it.
Yeah.
But we kind of found our way, you know, the way he was talking to the players, I think, and we're talking mid-90s now. We're not talking the 2000s, if you like, but even so, and we know great coaches like Johnny Todd and that get their players to perform under certain, but every player is different. What I witnessed, I certainly wasn't happy with the way he was communicating with the players.
Basically, he didn't survive that, did he? He was gone a matter of a few weeks after that or at the end of the season?
Oh, well, I actually became president before the season ended. And history will tell you that Glascott moved on and Wayne Blackwell became the coach.
And Wayne Blackwell brought some success to the club, didn't he? I think in 1997, Perth had their best year getting to a preliminary final. Tell us about the relationship you had with Wayne Blackwell and how you brought him to the club. Where did you know him from?
Barry Cable was my director of footy whilst I was on the board, and Cabes and I interviewed a number of applicants, and in the end we chose Wayne. He had already shown some success on the East Coast and I think coached Northern to a premiership the year before, and so Wayne came in, and along with Wayne came Craig McGrath, I think by memory, that played for the Eagles, and Craig took on the reserves. So in the first year, in 96, they won the reserves premiership. And in 97, we had a star-studded footy team. And under Wayne's leadership, we only just missed out on making the grand final by losing the preliminary final to South Fremantle. So that was a derby year that year.
Nick, when you took over from Barry McGrath as president of the Perth Football Club, you said, "I will change this club. This club needs to go in a different direction." What was your focus and what was your challenge when you took over? What were the things that you needed to address?
Well, I think it's like anything, whether it's a business or a football club. At the end of the day, it starts from the top, and you need the right people in the right places doing the right things and all working as a team. And I felt that at that time, you know, the general management of the footy club was a little bit tired and stale. The football management side was same, tired and a bit stale. It was And mind you, I wasn't that popular when I first arrived as president.
Why was that?
Well, because the people at the footy club were pretty much set in their way. And one would say that, you know, there might have been a cancer in the walls, if you like. So when your general manager gets moved on and your football manager gets moved on, the people that love those guys, and nothing against those guys, and they love the Perth Footy Club as well, but your support crew that works with those kind of people get a little bit hurt. Unfortunately, the new broom, if you like, can be seen as not a nice broom.
You mentioned Barry Cable. He was the director of football when you were president there, but I believe you also won over, probably through Barry, some of the stalwarts of the Perth Football Club that were also keen to see change. Perhaps you can rattle off some of those supporters that you had when you took over, players.
Absolutely. It wasn't – having Barry on board was a real strength for our board. But the other thing is too – and Cliff Horton, for example, we appointed him as our patron, and he was kind of my mentor, if you like. And back in those days, some of the stalwarts of the club of the 60s and the 70s – and I'm talking the Merv McIntoshes and the 55 Premiership team that were still kind of – still alive back then – those guys – hadn't been invited back to the club for many years. And we appointed Mick Devine as our, and we changed it from general manager to CEO because that's what Mick was. He was a CEO. And the work that Mick did was just fantastic. And he got people back and we had functions. And so we kind of reunited, if you like, the past with the present. Major changes took place.
One of the big changes that happened in the landscape of WA football was that during your presidency, the Peel Thunder were formed in 1996. And as we know, they had a very turbulent start to their football existence in the West Australian Football League competition. It was known the West Star Rules, actually, at that stage. There was a lot of opposition to Peel Thunder coming in. And I believe that the West Australian Football Commission, under the likes of Jeff Ovens and Peter Tannock and co, wanted Peel Thunder in to represent the Mandurah Peel region. Can you take us through that time, how much pressure there was from the commission to try and get Peel in?
Well, it was no secret.
Because you had the casting vote in all that in the end, didn't you?
Yeah, and that all happened only because of the media, if you like. Even I am a staunch WFL supporter, so the idea of a ninth licence doesn't sit well with a lot of people of the past in the WFL. The commission, they just wanted to make some changes because since 87, obviously, the wheels fell off the car at the WFL. So having taking footy to the grassroots, taking it out was something that they really wanted to do. How the ninth licence issue transpired basically was because there were four strong WFL clubs.
What, supporting the licence of Peel Thunder, correct?
No, they were dead against. And when I say strong, I mean they were financially strong. They didn't need the support of the commission.
So which clubs were those, do you recall?
Yeah, well, clubs like Subiaco, for example.
Claremont,
East Fremantle and South Fremantle at that time. They were the four clubs that were strong against a ninth licence.
Mm-hmm. So then West Perth, East Perth, Swan Districts. Oh, Perth, of course. How could I forget?
Well,
were in support?
Well, Swan Districts and East Perth were struggling financially, more so. I think the other four clubs, all of them, were struggling financially. Mm-hmm. But of course, West Perth had been moved to Joondalup. I think East Perth, Swans and Perth relied heavily on the support of the commission to survive. They let it known to the media that they supported the ninth licence. And so when it came to voting at commission level, the media just assumed and expected that those three clubs would vote, the other four would be against, but they didn't know about the Perth Football Club because we weren't speaking to the media about it and we kept ourselves tight-lipped at the time because I had my own issues at board level where I had half the board that supported the ninth licence and the other half the board, so you got four and four, that didn't support the ninth licence.
And in the end, what, you had the casting vote on whether Perth were going to go that way or that way?
Well, that's right. In the end, there would be a commission vote and I would have to vote on behalf of the Perth Football Club. And so right up until the 11th hour, it wasn't known how the Perth Football Club would vote.
So take us through that period. You said you had a board that was split on the decision. How did you finally come? And you'll let me know the decision. How did you finally come to the decision that you made as president of the Perth Footy Club?
Well, without going into a lot of detail, what I can say is this. Even I was taking as much time as I could to make the decision, remembering that the commission had supported the Perth Football Club under our regime with a $100,000 loan. You know,
when did that loan come your way, that $100,000 loan? Was it while this was transpiring?
No, it was before. It was really basically after the club became under my management with Mick Devine as the CEO.
Okay.
And Mick Devine was just fantastic in the way, you know, we had business plans. We prepared an excellent plan going forward. And the commission supported the plan in what we wanted to do. So they supported us by helping us out with a 100K loan. But in relation to the actual vote on the day and how it come, I was able to make a decision and vote in support of the Peel Thunder Footy Club. It all happened on the day of the commission. On the day of the meeting at the commission. Prior to that, in the morning, I got a visit from Barry Cable and Mick Devine. And they were a bit concerned that they didn't know how I was going to vote. They had been to visit Cliff Horton, who was in hospital at the time at Mount Hospital. Now, Cliff was well into his 80s, like 85, 86 or something. And remembering that Cliff Horton was the legend of the Perth Football Club, you know, president in the 60s when they were the most powerful club in Australia. And, you know, and I loved Cliff and he was my mentor and our patron. Barry said to me, he said, listen, you need to go and see Cliff because he's a bit concerned about tonight's meeting. And I said, no worries, I'll go and see him. So on the way to the meeting, I called into the Mount Hospital to see Cliff. And there's Cliff lying in the bed there he just had a 5 bypass operation. Mm-hmm. He's lying in bed with all his tubes hanging out of his body. And I said, Cliff, what's wrong? And he said, I'm worried about what you're going to do tonight. Here's the patron and the legend of the footy club saying to me, he's worried how the president is going to vote at this meeting on this particular night in relation to the 9th licence. I said, Cliff, you don't really need to worry about that. I've got it all under control because, I mean, that's my job. I mean, I'm the president. He's supposed to have full confidence in what I do. And he and his comments said to me, I need to worry because the Perth Football Club is my life and you don't take from the hand that feeds you. Mm. And I got to honestly say that is when I made my decision to vote in favour of Peel Thunder.
And Peel Thunder, on the back of that vote, were admitted into the West Australian Football League, or as it was known, West Star Rules competition for 1997.
Yeah.
But there was a chance, had your vote not gone that way, that Peel would not have been admitted?
No, because that is correct, because the commission needed my vote. If I hadn't given my vote, it would have gone the other way and the commission would have lost the opportunity to bring in Peel Thunder into the competition.
So that was the most pivotal moment that changed the landscape of the West Australian Football League competition since 1934, when the likes of Claremont and Swan Districts were admitted. Had you not gone the way Cliff Horton mentioned it to you, we may not have Peel Thunder in the competition, correct?
100%.
100%. What was the reaction once the board found out? Half of the board didn't want you to vote the way you voted. So what was the reaction of some members of your board when you returned for the next board meeting?
It wasn't good, Peter.
It was a volatile meeting, I gather.
Well, they called a special meeting of the board. Well, the two directors at the time, Brian Lawrence and also Richard Cam, were kind of the strong voices of that side. And they called a special meeting to try and put in a vote of no confidence and basically
try and oust you out of the presidency.
Yeah, and would oust me out of the presidency. Unfortunately, they failed because the vote went against that and I still remained as president at that time.
But you did eventually step aside. Reasons alone why you decided to step aside at the AGM in 1998?
Yeah, at 98, I felt that, you know, I'd given 3 and a bit years. It's very demanding being a president of a footy club at that level, especially with what the WFL was going through at the time. You know, these days, obviously, the funding's greater than what it used to be, but it's still demanding for any president at WFL level. So, you know, I had a business to run. You know, we've been involved in family business since 1969, and I thoroughly enjoyed my 3 years, three and a plus years as president of the Perth Footy Club, but it was time to move on.
And you look back during that period, and it was turbulent, there's no question, but also it was satisfying because Perth had that fantastic year while you were there in 1997 when they got to a preliminary final. How do you look back on that period as president of the Perth Footy Club, Nick?
To be honest, admittedly, I might have rubbed a few people up the wrong way, but in saying that, I thoroughly enjoyed it. There's some great people at that football club. I'm sure they're still there now, and I reckon Barra has got he's experiencing it now. Adrian Barrich is experiencing it now, what it's like. It's challenging, and he will get some great enjoyment out of it. But, you know, when I look back at my mainly 3 years, obviously in 96 we won the Reserves Premiership. In 97 we had a great first semi-final against East Perth. We won by 10 goals. I felt we got robbed in the preliminary final with against South Fremantle. I thought the derby was definitely on the cards, but we had a great team with the likes of Spinksy, and at the time with the host club arrangement, we had a few of the AFL players playing with us. And Wayne Blackwell did a fantastic job in 97 to get us to that point. I mean, that was the most successful year till today, which is 46 years. I like to put that feather in my cap, if you like, that under our leadership, we had the best year in 46 years till today. And in 98, when I bowed out, I think we ended up with about 80 grand in the bank profit. So enjoyed my time. And that's, I think I can look back and feel proud of those achievements.
Good on you, Nick Catalano. Thanks for joining us. A pleasure to have a chat to you and go behind the scenes of what was a very interesting time in the history of the WAFL. Thanks for your time.
My pleasure, Pete. Thanks.